USP 1788, 2022 Revision Overview, Frequently Asked Questions. In May 2021, a revision to USP 1788 methods for determination of subvisible particulate matter was published in order to provide clarification and support of the information given in chapters USP 788 Particulate Matter in Injections, USP 789 Particulate Matter in Ophthalmic Solutions, and USP 787 Subvisible Particulate Matter in Therapeutic Protein Injections. While the previous version of USP 1788 only covered the testing requirements for optical light obscuration testing and microscope testing, the revision expands the scope of testing requirements to include newly viable technologies such as flow imaging and new therapeutic protein solutions. Particle Measuring Systems APSS 2000 testing system still fully complies with the requirements for use in the testing of solutions in the normative chapters and revised general chapters. In light of these revisions, Particle Measuring Systems is sharing some insight about the requirements and discussing how this may affect the APSS 2000 testing system. PMS has provided a methods review of the USP 1788 revisions. PMS also has an on-demand webinar that discusses meeting the USP 729, USP 788, and USP 1788 regulatory requirements, and an article comparing USP 788 and USP 1788. This FAQ paper is a follow-up to the webinar, USP 1788, 2022 Revision Overview, presented by Mark Hallworth and Rick Dusky, that looks at the holistic view of finished product contaminants and how they should be investigated. Many thoughtful questions were asked about the USP 1788 revision and troubleshooting the APSS 2000 system. Questions submitted during and after the webinar are answered by Mark Hallworth below. If you have any additional queries for our experts, submit them directly on our website.
I will be asking the questions.
And I will be answering them. Now let's get started.
Can we use other sample containers besides the glass container? Like a conical tube?
Yes, any container is acceptable provided it is clean. It is worth doing a clean water test using similar containers to demonstrate that they are cleanable and do not contribute to the overall particle contamination. If anything, using different containers demonstrates the robustness of your system.
Should I perform verification parameter testing prior to testing samples each time or annually?
I think you're referring to full validation testing, but I'll run through the primary tests you can do to ensure your APSS 2000 is giving you accurate results. Verified as clean, it is recommended that the instrument be verified as clean before use each day. If your lab processes a particularly high volume of samples, you may choose to run the cleanliness verification test more frequently within a day or at the start of each shift. Suitability test, or count standard suitability test, it is recommended that this test be performed on a 3-month interval. Again, if your lab processes a particularly high volume of samples, you may choose to run this test more frequently. Due to the highly stable nature of the APSS 2000, even in a high-throughput case where you wish to be extra cautious, the suitability test would still not be required more than once a month. Lastly, there is the validation, aka the performance qualification. Instrument validation is an annual event. If there is a case for concern or the unit is sent away for repair, the validation should be re-performed before instrument use is resumed. The annual 12-month interval would then reset. Additionally, an equipment operating procedure, EOP, is available for the APSS system for guidance on how to properly operate the instrument and perform the daily tests that keep your APSS 2000 in good working order. As a general note, laboratory operations can vary widely depending on the nature of the products being tested and testing volume. Best practices are very much individual and lab-dependent. It is PMS' intention to provide you with the tools and tests to meet your needs while you determine the testing frequencies that maintain the highest quality for your products.
If the solution I'm testing is non-viscous and non-achromatic and method 1 fails, but method 2 passes, how is this justified to regulators?
This is a tricky one, as failing method 1 for count value is a fail, unless associated with the other known artifacts of testing. The test name in JP is insoluble particles, and you may have some hydroscopic particles that look bigger due to a refractive difference caused by unsuitable surface tensions, so you might try using a different media. Also, if the failure is for count values, try serial dilutions of the sample to see if the failure is linear or again caused by insolubility. The aim is to determine why it fails light obscuration testing, and this is then justification to use microscopic methods.
Please describe operator error further.
Operators use a reticule to determine the size of particles against the reference image. This interpretation is given to potential differences in over or under sizing and therefore may not be counted. Fibers, etc., also have different sizes depending on the plane of reading. On heavily contaminated filters, near failure, particles can overlap or the grid references used might be different, like percent of filter inspected. There are optical systems that read filter media and these will be normalized using microscopic methods.
My analytical lab requests 25 milliliters minimum samples in single article or 10 units if less than 25 milliliters. They also pool samples or add water to bring to volume. What are your thoughts on these sample procedures?
Per USP 788, the smallest sample volume required is 5 milliliters, and 4 samples are required for testing, discarding the first, so this totals a minimum of 20 milliliters needed per test. It also requires a tear volume, typically 1 milliliter, to ensure everything is moving in equilibrium prior to testing, so the total sample volume needed for testing to USP 788 is 24 milliliters. This is what determines the minimum necessary sample volume. The changes to USP 1788 allow for smaller sample volumes and dilution, so you may be able to justify the use of smaller samples, but this will also give greater variability between samples as particles are not always uniformly distributed in solution, especially the larger particles that tend to be more difficult to sample.
I have failed tests due to bubbles created from sonication. How long after sonication should I wait to test?
The recommended wait time for a solution to degas after sonication is 30 seconds. However, if you are still experiencing microbubbles following that period, you might try performing a study with wait times versus results to determine the optimum wait time for your process. Many solutions will degas readily, however, as viscosity and chemistry changes, it is possible that more air will be retained in the solution or attached to the particle surface. Customized sonication times or alternative tests, like the microscopic method, may be required to rid the solution of bubbles and/or confirm that the solution is free of bubbles.
Can a droplet, not a solid particle, be deformed by shear under the flow rate during measurement? Would this bring a bias to the measurement?
There are several optical effects that can impact measurement. A sample is drawn into the sampler using a syringe, and this creates a negative pressure, aka a vacuum, within the system. As a result of the liquid moving at a different rate to the solids, sick, in suspension, droplets of different density may deform at different rates relative to that vacuum. It is possible to see droplets swelling with the pressure change and potential shearing as the droplets are pulled through the sample tube. One of the reasons we use a tear volume is to minimize the equilibrium of particles in fluid movement. Refractive index differences are also a concern leading to the Schlieren effect mentioned in USP 1788. All standards data is traceable to latex spheres in water, which are unaffected by the droplet conditions described here. For this reason, the revision talks about a holistic approach to understanding the contamination in finished product and its potential impact on quality.
PMS documents recommend that the APSS 2000 be recalibrated every 12 months. What about the revalidation interval? Please advise how often the APSS system should be revalidated to assure it works properly, using 10 and 15 micron MIC 3800 particle standards.
Instrument validation, or performance qualification, is also an annual event. If there is a case for concern or the unit is sent away for repair, the validation should be re-performed before instrument use is resumed, and the annual 12-month interval would then reset. Full instrument qualification, IQ, operations qualification, OQ, and performance qualification, PQ, protocols are available from PMS as an optional accessory for your APSS 2000 system if needed.
Regarding USP 729, globule size distribution in lipid injectable emulsions. Method 1 can be determined by a zetasizer, but for method 2, because lipid formulations and emulsions are different than liquid preparations, we are unsure about how to perform this test with a light obscuration particle counter.
In this case, we would use dilution to achieve the count numbers required for the instrument. This might be 10 to the 6th or greater and, intrinsically, may be prone to amplification of errors when normalized. In any system, the addition of the water also adds an opportunity for nucleation of the lipid into a much smaller particle than previously undetected. Note that it is the only method now allowed by USP, so caution and process validation are required.
Why is there variation in results when testing materials with the same particle size distribution with wet and dry dispersion?
Liquid standards have additives, surfactants, to ensure dispersion in solution. The dry particles, when wetted, do not have these additives and may remain hydrophobic in water. You could try adding a surfactant to see if this reduces surface tension on the particle and allows for dispersion. Alternatively, you could use liquid-targeted standards.
How can we calibrate the Liqualase E-Series to verify particles greater than 30 micrometers if the calibration wizard is from 1.5 or 2.0 micrometers to 30 micrometers, but the sensor's maximum detectable size is 130 microns?
The Liqualase has a straight-line curve calibration from 15 micrometers to the upper limit of 125 micrometers and beyond, but PMS does not calibrate above this size. The particle counter can be verified at 50 micrometers for calibration using the available 15 channels spread around the 50 micrometer center point.
The author of this paper was Mark Hallworth, the global manager of life sciences at Particle Measuring Systems. Mark Hallworth is the life sciences strategic senior GMP scientist. Mark has managed the design, installation and validation of over 200 environmental monitoring system projects worldwide. He has designed several products specific for pharmaceutical environmental monitoring, including particle counters for explosive and corrosive areas and 21 CFR Part 11 compliant software for batch test and release. He currently lectures for the PDA, ISPE and other international pharmaceutical societies on environmental monitoring and GMP compliance design and validation. Mark has written over 100 technical papers on environmental monitoring and contributed to several books specific to this field. He was awarded the IEST James Milden Award for significant contributions to the advancement and increase of knowledge in the field of contamination control. Copyright 2022 Particle Measuring Systems, Inc. All rights reserved. Reproduction or translation of any part of this work without the permission of the copyright owner is unlawful. Requests for permission or further information should be addressed to Particle Measuring Systems, Inc. at +1-303-443-7100. App Note 312, last modified February 23, 2022.